Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
So the Bucks now have a three-way tie in the NFC South with Carolina and, yes, your New Orleans Saints. The Falcons, the only team to lose in that division. 32-6 they fell to the not-so-good Philadelphia Eagles. I was shocked by that. We're going to get to all the NFL games, including Jameis Winston's starting debut in the Saints, in which he threw five touchdown passes to bury Aaron Rodgers and the Packers by 35. Just incredible. Lots of NFL news, of course, college football, Florida, USF, and woof, what happened to Florida State and Jacksonville State? Goodness gracious, some disparaging losses and words up in Tallahassee. But first, we'll start with the Bucks. And since we last were with you, we had a chance to talk to Bruce Arians about their victory, of course, Thursday night over the Dallas Cowboys. Some interesting things I thought that he said, and some things you can glean just from the snap counts and things like that when we go back and sort of do the post-mortem on this game. I thought it was interesting. Steve Versnick, Ronald Jones was running the ball pretty well. I think he had like four carries, and then the fumble occurred. And then he stayed on the bench the rest of the night, and Leonard Fournette got all the snaps. And when we asked Bruce Arians why that was, like if it was a form of punishment, which has happened before with Ronald Jones, he said no. He said he just couldn't come back from that fumble mentally. So what does that mean exactly?
That's not what you want to hear about your RB1.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, turnovers are going to have – it was a bad turnover, and you don't want it, but you've got to be able to bounce back from that. And whether I don't know what it means. I don't think it's a good thing for the Bucks at this point. But it doesn't mean it's not something that can't be overcome, and he can start this week, of course. I mean, you got a couple extra days off over the weekend. Players, what, aren't reporting back till, what, Tuesday, I think?
Tuesday, yeah. They've been off a while.
Yeah. So, you know, you've got some time to whatever mentally get over that or, you know, move on in your head. But that's not what you want to hear your coach say about your top running, but your starting running back.
Yeah. Leonard Fournette, as you recall, he also had a bad play. They had a ball bounce off his hands and into, into a defender's hands for an interception that was clearly on him, one of the two interceptions that Brady threw. The other one was a Hail Mary. They didn't bench him. Now, this happened last year where Rojo had a fumble in a game, and then he came back and he played against Carolina. He had another fumble on a pass that he lost, and he stayed in that game, came back, and had a 98-yard run. And we asked Arians then, I specifically remember this, like, what was the difference? And he said, well, because he came off the field, and I could tell that he was in a good place, and he was raring to go, and he handled it much better, and so we put him right back in the game. So I don't know if Bruce is real adept at reading body language or whatnot. There's a couple shots of him on the bench where he was, you know, obviously he was despondent. I mean, he didn't feel good about turning the ball over and it resulting in a touchdown or whatnot. So, but they had four turnovers in this game. And when you go back and really look at it, the Bucs had no business winning with four turnovers and 11 penalties for 110 yards.
That's still the amazing thing to me of that game. Four turnovers, yeah, and you won the game.
Yeah.
Is everyone was talking about how great Dak Prescott was, and he performed much better than I thought he would coming back from that injury in the first time. But the story of the game was the Bucks turned the ball over four times, 11 penalties, and still won the game.
Right, and that's just not supposed to happen. And so I sort of credit, you know, a team finding its way how to win. I mean, obviously, great Brady's the best winner that's ever existed in the NFL. And if you leave time on the clock for him, then clearly he's going to bury you, and he did. There's some controversial plays. You know, the pass to Godwin late in the game that set up the field goal could have been called offensive pass interference, you know, because he kind of arm-barred the guy, but they let that go. There was a couple defensive plays. You know, they had all these injuries with Sean Murphy Bunting. We'll get to his situation. But, you know, a guy like Andrew Adams, who had been here all of a week, he was their safety – backup safety for a couple of years, tried free agency, signed with the Philadelphia Eagles, and got cut. And he came into town just a week or so ago. Of course, he knew the system. He knew the defense. He found himself out there playing. Jordan Whitehead couldn't start, obviously. They had a couple other injuries with Sean Murphy bunting. And he makes an open field tackle on Ezekiel Elliott on a pitch play where he has to defeat the tight end who's out there blocking him. And it's just him. It's just one-on-one. If the tight end makes a better block or if Andrew Adams doesn't make a great open field tackle on Ezekiel Elliott, he's walking in the end zone. And that's a touchdown, and that's the difference in the game. Holds him to a field goal there. So they got contributions from a lot of guys, although I don't think the news is particularly good on Sean Murphy bunting. If there is a positive, it's that they don't think it's season-ending. But that doesn't mean it's not season-altering because, frankly, they don't know how many weeks he's going to be out. He had the MRI. There's not been really much progress in terms of, like, getting a prognosis. You know, is it 3 weeks? Is it 4 weeks? I think it's going to be longer, personally, than just a month. We'll see. Kind of swap some messages with Sean Murphy Bunting, who said that they just don't know yet, that they you know, they're not able to get enough information from the MRI. A lot of times there's swelling and things involved that preclude you from really getting a good picture of the situation. But he did dislocate his elbow. It's obviously popped back in now. But you know, that means that Jamel Dean is going to be on the spot. And they picked on Jamel Dean. And I thought also, and we talked to Bruce about this, and I wrote about it in Sunday's Tampa Bay Times and on TampaBay.com. Look, I'm not saying when I wrote this that's it. Everybody's going to beat the Bucs this way. But as Bruce Arians noted and agreed with me, if you notice what the game plan was, it was very similar to the Rams a year ago. I mean, all they did was they were not going to run the football very effectively. They basically abandoned much effort doing it. They were going to try to stay away from the center of their defense, which is the strength of the Bucs defense, those two defensive tackles, the two inside linebackers. You know, the secondary is sort of their weakness if they had one. So all Dak Prescott did all night was flip the ball out to the perimeter and make the corners, you know, come up and make tackles, which is something they don't want to do. They want to play pass defense. And they were pressuring them with screens, you know, tons of bubble screens and receiver screens. And as Bruce Arians said to me, he goes, look, if we don't get it stopped, we're just going to see screen after screen after screen. And that's what the Rams did. The Rams came in here a year ago. They didn't try to run the football at all. I mean, you know, I think that at that time, Jared Goff threw it 50-something times as well. And you wouldn't have expected Dak Prescott coming off the foot injury and all of that and not having played in the preseason to drop back and throw it almost 60 times. But that was the game plan, and it worked until they got to the red zone. And that's where Bruce says, and he's right, that in situational football like red zone, the Bucs beat them. The Bucs beat them, held them to field goals. They missed one. Obviously, they missed an extra point. That certainly changed, you know, the game when you win by two. And so they were really better in those situations than the Bears were, than Dallas was. So I just think that they're going to have an issue in the secondary. And Jamel Dean, who got picked on, is going to have to play bigger. I think if they get Jordan Whitehead back, and Bruce said he was 90% recovered from that hamstring injury. So if he's able to play, that gives him some flexibility because then you could play Mike Edwards in the slot. You could play Ross Cockrell in the slot if you want to. So you have a little bit more flexibility. But it's going to be something to watch, even though I don't think this week is going to be as difficult because they play the Falcons.
Yeah, and you know, look, there's a reason you have to be able to run the ball in the red zone. Mm-hmm. That secondary has a lot less ground to cover.
Yes.
When there's only 20 or less yards left in the field, which means, you know, while you could pick on Jamel Dean and many others going up and down the field, the closer you get to that goal line, the less field they've got to cover.
A lot more people.
And without a run game, it's still going to be tough to score on the Bucs if their guys are doing what they're supposed to do. I believe Whitehead coming back will make a big difference in that secondary because it does give you a lot more options to move guys around. You know, being without Sean Murphy Bunting and Whitehead in that game really hurt.
Yeah, no, it definitely did. And they got a week to figure that out. And if Whitehead comes back, that'll help them. There were some guys that went unsung in this game. I'll be writing about one of them is Vita Vea. Vita Vea did not record a stat that I could detect, at least on the final game sheet. And I'm here to tell you that he was probably their most dominant player on defense. This guy pushed the pocket so many times into Dak's lap, and Dak got the ball off most of those times, but he had to turn down throws simply because he didn't have time to look down the field. And he drew a holding penalty, which was critical in that game. He got some hits on the quarterback as well. But if you watch the power that he plays with and the quickness and the technique as a pass rusher, not just a run stopper, but his ability to get upfield, it's really impressive. And he's one of those guys that, you know, it's the old saying, if you watch the football, you miss the game. Well, if you don't watch Vita Vea on every play, you've missed the most dominant player that they had on defense, at least last Thursday night. He was really impressive. And I'm pretty excited to see what this guy could do in a 17-game season. You know, everybody talks about Aaron Donald, and he's a terrific player and player of the year and all that stuff. Aaron Donald doesn't play the run like Vita Vea, and he's a better pass rusher, obviously. He's had, you know, 20-something sacks a season at times, so you give him that, and he's totally different body type and all of that. But you have to block. You have to use two guys on Vita Vea. You have to double-team him on every play. And when you do that, you know, Sue might get singled up. Sometimes they double both those guys, which means your outside rushers have one-on-ones. I mean, he just makes so much happen there, and he keeps everybody off their linebackers. So watch the tape. You know, he was great. Also, Rob Gronkowski, I wrote about him over the weekend, just what a smart football player he is. And, you know, of course, Tom Brady's confidence and reliability in him is – you know, next level. I mean, he's played with them for 10, 11 seasons now. But you watch those two audibles, the two touchdowns that he has, and it's, you know, really just Gronk and Tom recognizing cover zero and then checking to him, faking like he's blocking down and then going out. It was just next level stuff. And I know Gronkowski gets a lot of run for sort of his happy-go-lucky attitude and, you know, his goofiness and all of this stuff. The fact of the matter is, he's a very, very smart football player. Like, his football IQ is enormous, and he works at it. He watches a lot of film, obviously works a lot with Tom, has worked to get himself back in better shape. I thought he looked great. And for him to come out and have two touchdowns in the first game, catch eight passes out of eight targets, I mean, that's how reliable he was, including two on the final drive. He went to him twice, one for a six-yarder, one for a 20-yarder. Right before the pass to Godwin that set up the game-winning field goal. So I thought those guys were pretty much in sync as well.
Yeah, I was worried about, and we've talked about this throughout training camp. We talked about it before the game. Thursday night, the drop passes are still a problem. And
yes.
We saw it again on Thursday. Godwin, yeah. And Fournette, and mm-hmm. you know, and that caused several of the turnovers. I mean, you know,
yeah.
you couldn't put the, you know, the one to Fournette, you can't put that on Brady.
No,
You know, it's his interception, but that wasn't him. Godwin with the fumble.
Yep.
You know, those guys, I mean, they've got all these weapons. If you can just, if you make the catches and hold the ball, yep. they're going to yep. put up tons of points. You know, they mm-hmm. had to kind of chase that game and come down to a last second field goal because they had four turnovers.
Right.
And some drop passes on top of that.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, you'd really like to see when they get back to practice this week and moving forward that, you know, there's got to be a better emphasis on that. And we've been talking about it all training camp. I mean, Bruce Arians has been mentioning it over and over.
It's been a problem, yeah.
You know, and that's one area. You've got all these weapons. Catch the ball. I mean, mm-hmm. they're good enough to.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just something they're going to have to deal with and get better at. Or, you know, whether it's a focus issue or – you know, whatever it is, they're going to have to figure that part out.
It's usually confidence. It's weird. You know, Godwin went through his whole career without having dropped a ball that I can remember. And, you know, his target to catch rate was enormous. And then we got in the playoffs. And remember, he struggled at Green Bay. And then he came back and made a circus catch at Green Bay and helped them win the game. And then we really didn't see it after that. But we did see it show up a couple times, you know, last Thursday night. Including one that was a deep shot. Now, it was over the wrong shoulder. He had to turn around and find it, but it still absolutely hit him in the hands. And he lost that, and he lost the fumble, which you absolutely can't do. I mean, if they go in and score that touchdown, this game is not even close. You know, mm-hmm. They win it going away. So, you know, plays like that against really good football teams, you lose. And I'm not saying – I don't know what Dallas is. You know, here's what I think about Dallas. I think they have a really good offense. I think that Dak is terrific. He clearly was better than anybody expected him or imagined him to be in his first game out, having not played any preseason, the injury week five last year, 333 days, all of that. But he's got tons of weapons. I mean, you know, Michael Gallup and Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb and those guys, they were fantastic. Although CeeDee Lamb absolutely gator-armed one over the middle that resulted in Carlton Davis's interception. That was a huge play that wasn't on Dak. It was just a lack of guts by CeeDee Lamb. But not every team has those weapons. And, you know, people were like, you know, because I think they do have a template. I think teams are going to attack their perimeter, and why wouldn't you? That's the softer spot of their defense. And people were like, well, but not everybody has those receivers. That's true. That's absolutely true. And the Rams had Cooper Kupp, and, you know, they had a bunch of guys that could do a similar thing. You need two or three. And I don't know. You know, Calvin Ridley, I mean, the Falcons still have some guys. We'll see how that all plays itself out. But I do know that they're vulnerable in the secondary, particularly on the perimeter. And, they, you know, teams are going to try to slow down that pass rush. You make the big guys run, right? You make the big guys run to the sidelines. You make the little guys have to come up and make tackles. If you can do what they don't want to do, you can have some success. But, again, to your point, it doesn't work in the red zone. When you get down there and the field's short and there's a lot of people in a small space, it doesn't do you much good. And that's probably why they were ineffective, you know, trying to score down there. But we'll see. We'll see how they take all this information, who's healthy. That'll be the first thing we find out when we go back and see the players on Tuesday. They're off until Tuesday. We have no access with anybody, but we'll still be writing stories, of course, in the Tampa Bay Times and on TampaBay.com. Meanwhile, since we're on the NFL, let's do Sunday. We'll go back to college football on Saturday. But how about your New Orleans Saints, right? They're playing the Green Bay Packers. Now, this is a football team that's been displaced by the hurricane in New Orleans. They've been in Dallas, not just the players, but like 250 players, coaches, family members, all of that. They travel to Jacksonville where they have their first quote-unquote home game. There's way more Packer fans that look like a home Green Bay game, to be honest with you, which we have seen before at Raymond James Stadium. And here comes Aaron Rodgers and the Packers, you know, the NFC runner-ups last year in the championship game. And Jameis Winston's making his first start in, I think they said, 600-and-something days, right? Because his last start in the NFL was the final game of 2019 season when he threw the overtime pick six to Atlanta. So he sat the bench all of last year behind Drew Brees. I think he threw like 11 or 12 passes all season. Gets his first start. And, you know, I thought at the beginning, Steve, they were playing around the quarterback. You know, Kamara was running the football. Jameis had some short throws. I think at one point he had only thrown for like 94 yards or something into the third quarter. But in the red zone, he was terrific. And, you know, the guy winds up throwing five touchdown passes, including a bomb, which was beautiful. And the Saints bury, I mean, absolutely demolish the Packers by 35. It's the first time that Aaron Rodgers has ever lost a game by that much.
Yeah, I think I had heard, too, that the Packers were like 6-1 the last 2 years in September. They always get off to hot starts. Aaron Rodgers performs well early in the season, and, boy, they came out and laid a dud. And credit to Jameis, too. I mean, and Sean Payton. I mean, we've talked about this. We've wanted to see what Sean Payton could draw up for Jameis to kind of keep Jameis from doing Jameis things, you know.
Right.
Always had all the skills in the world, but would make those throws that you can't make and it result in interceptions. And, you know, can you scheme it enough and put him in positions enough where he doesn't make those throws? And today he was fantastic.
He was absolutely terrific. And, you know, a couple to the tight ends. I thought that there was a bad roughing the passer call against the Saints that gave them a second chance and allowed them to throw another touchdown. But it didn't matter because Jordan Love was in the game by the middle of the fourth quarter. The Packers, you know, threw the white flag out there, and they were done for the day. They were not competitive at all offensively or defensively. And, you know, Sean Payton played around his quarterback a little bit, ran Kamara, gave him some short throws. Jameis turned down some throws. Like, it was interesting. He got back there. Didn't have anybody open immediately. He took off and ran a few times. A couple times he just threw the ball out of bounds, and I was impressed with that. Like, he has learned, you know, to be patient. And as Byron Leftwich told me, you know, sometimes playing quarterback is boring. You know, you just have to accept that I'm not going to make a big play on every play. And instead of, hey, I want to, you know, want this to be juiced up a little, let me try to take this shot here or there. The best quarterbacks don't do that. You know, they throw the ball where it's supposed to be thrown, or they throw it out of bounds, and they live to play another day. They're not going to make that big mistake. And he played a clean game. And that's, if Jameis Winston can do that, we know he has talent. He's thrown for 5,000. You don't throw for 5,000 yards and 33 touchdowns in the National Football League if you don't have talent. Those are not mistakes. So we know he has all the talent in the world. And the Saints offense is harder to defend because he can push the ball downfield. That's something Drew Brees hasn't been able to do for a number of years now. And so you add that with the focus on stopping Alvin Kamara in that strong running game. They got a very good offensive line. We know their defense is terrific. They're missing some receivers. I mean, Michael Thomas and some guys, but others have stepped up, and that's a good football team. I'm just here to tell you, and I've been saying this, I don't know if people finally will believe me or not, the New Orleans Saints are the defending champions in the NFC South. Guess what, folks? They're going to be the hardest out that the Bucs face all year. I truly believe that. I wouldn't just give this division to Tampa Bay. They didn't win it last year. They won the Super Bowl, and that's what you're after, you know? And they beat them in the game that mattered. They beat them in the NFC Divisional Playoff in New Orleans. That one was the one that really counted, right? But they absolutely got beaten down the other two times they played them, including 38-3 in Raymond James. And if you think that it's going to be any easier this year, I got something for you. It's going to be harder, in a sense, because I think the emotion that Jameis will play with, the better football team that he has around him, and the fact that he can drive the ball against that secondary as opposed to what Brees could do, which was like, you know, trying to play in a phone booth at times. They're going to be a tough out, and they're going to win, you know, their share of games. They're going to win 12. I think they're going to win 12 or 13 games, you know, maybe more. Who knows? But the Saints are going to be the story in the NFC South this year, along with the Bucks, and we'll just see how those games go and who blinks first and all of that. Also, I don't think Carolina's that bad. You know, they beat the Jets. They didn't beat a great team. Sam Darnold got revenge on his old team. But I was impressed a little bit. You know, Christian McCaffrey is back. And that's their offense, right? That's the quarterback's best friend. He looked good. Their defense looked good. Matt Rhule's had a couple years now to put in his system at Carolina. I think they're going to be better than most people anticipate. You know, so there's some teams in their own division. Now, Atlanta, on the other hand, woof. What happened there? I didn't think the Philadelphia Eagles are a very good football team, and they spanked the Falcons.
Oh, was it 32-6? I mean, you know, and that's at home. And now you've got to go on the road for week two against Tampa Bay, who gets a few extra days of rest before that game, too.
Right. Yes, I mean, exactly.
Atlanta's staring 0-2 in the face at this point.
They are, and Atlanta is the perfect team. Now, you recall, you know, when they came off the bye week and they were trying to regroup and they got down 17-0 in Atlanta right away, and they came back and Brady had that tremendous second half, and they won up there, and it kind of got them going, you know, for the second half of the season, or the last quarter of the season, I should say. But Atlanta's the perfect team to play right about now because you need some confidence. You need to play a cleaner game. You need to go out and curb stomp somebody. You have a chance to do that with the Falcons. They're not going to lay down and just give you a game. I'm not saying that. I mean, the NFC South is weird, right? Nobody's intimidated by each other. They play each other so much. There's so much familiarity. So the Falcons have always played tough. But if you can go out there and execute well and cut out the penalties, I mean, the 11 penalties for 110 yards, I thought we were past that last year, week five in Chicago. All of a sudden they came back. You know, you can't have that many flags and maintain any kind of offense. So if they cut all that out and they have a game to get their rhythm back, get a little confidence back, go out there and put 35 or so points on the board, if Philly can do it, I assure you the Bucs can. Then now you've got a little wind at your sails, and the next two games, folks, is going to say a lot about who the Bucs are. They've got at Los Angeles against the Rams, who, as we speak, as we're doing this podcast, are beating the Bears right now on Sunday Night Football. And yes, they're going to be better, I think, with Matthew Stafford than they were with Jared Goff. I just believe that with all my heart. And their defense is tremendous, and they got great corners in Ramsey and others. So that's going to be a tough out. And then after that, talk about emotion. You've got to go to Foxborough and play the New England Patriots, who lost to the Miami Dolphins at home, which I did not see coming, to Tua Tagovailoa. you know, going up against Mac Jones. Mac Jones played well, not well enough, as it turns out, in a close game. They lost up there. But there's so much emotion. That's a good football team in New England. So, you know, this is a pivotal, sort of a trap game. You can't look ahead, certainly. But you got a chance to get a little rhythm and a little momentum before you play two really good football teams, I think, on the road.
Yeah, we'll see how good New England is, but the emotion of that game is going to be what's hard. And not just for Tom Brady, but for Rob Gronkowski as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And maybe Antonio Brown, you know, his return from one game playing up there. But, you know, I think that the jury's still out on how good New England will be. Mac Jones played well, but I think the Rams are really good. I think Matthew Stafford just takes that team to another level. You know, it's like I said, they're up, I think, by two scores as we're watching it now, as we're recording this on Sunday Night Football.
It's down to one score at this point. Oh, Justin Fields scored.
No, I think you're ahead of me.
Give you the update.
I think you're ahead. Yeah, you're ahead of me. I think I'm guessing they're scoring on this play, then that's showing up on my TV. So
there you go. Yeah.
Yeah, the joys of streaming games. You're a little behind everybody else. So, yep, there's the score. So
exactly.
But yeah, you know, I think that the next 2 weeks, and you know, you're going to have the LA, which is going to be the big 4 o'clock game nationwide, and then of course that's Sunday Night Football up in New England. So, I think if you get through, you know, the next, basically, if you're 3-1 by the time you get through the first four games, I think you're fine of Tampa Bay.
Yeah, no, I would agree with you. But there were some interesting close games. Your Cincinnati Bengals tried to give one away. They won in overtime, 27-24 over the Vikings.
I'm always one that says coaches that should be more aggressive, but the Bengals had a 4th-and-1 on their own 30-ish, somewhere around that range, with 6 minutes to go in the third quarter, up two scores, and you had all the momentum in the game, and you went for it. And you missed it, and it gave Minnesota went and scored right away, and all of a sudden it gave all the momentum back to Minnesota. You ended up holding on, going to overtime and winning, but I didn't quite understand that play call, but it ends up working out in the end. So,
yeah, and then the other big game, of course, Kansas City, the Chiefs. Patrick Mahomes has never lost in the month of September, and he still hasn't lost, even though he trailed the Cleveland Browns until they made the cataclysmic, dropped the punt snap mistake to give him the ball back and allow Mahomes and the Chiefs to take the lead. And then kind of a bad decision by Baker Mayfield under duress, throws an interception as they're driving and ends the game. So that was a tough one. But
how about the Houston Texans leading the AFC South?
How about that?
I mean, yeah. How about the Colts? The Colts lost at home.
Right.
I believe they played, to Seattle. And then the Titans got just rolled by the Cardinals at home.
That was the biggest shock of the day to me. I like Kyler Murray. I like the Titans. I didn't see Chandler Jones getting five sacks in one game. But the Titans were not competitive. I mean, they're at home. I saw this team go up against the Bucs in practice, and they're very physical. They're like Vrabel that way. But Derrick Henry couldn't even be a factor because they fell behind so quickly. And Kyler Murray just bombed that defense like nobody's business, man. That was a shock to me easily they won that game.
That one was, and Pittsburgh beating Buffalo was a little bit of a shock. I mean, Pittsburgh's a good team, but I assume Buffalo at home was going to win that game, and them going down, that was a little shocking too.
Yeah, pump the brakes a little bit on your Josh Allen's the MVP in the AFC. I mean, you know, he did some nice things. He didn't do enough good things. You know, he'll run on occasion. He made some good throws. He made some bad throws. And they didn't put up any points against that. Pittsburgh defense, I think, is better than most people realize. Obviously, T.J. Watt is just unbelievable. I mean, the pressure that they put on Allen was terrific. But Buffalo has a good defense, and, yeah, I credit Big Ben for hanging in there. They ran the ball well. They did what they had to do, and they came from 10 points down, I think it was, and won going away. So a nice win for Mike Tomlin. Of course, Pittsburgh started out 10-0 last year, but I think this team's better because Najee Harris can run the football. They've got a good running back. They seem more committed to the run, which is absolutely going to help Ben. And Ben did what Ben does. He made some clutch throws and some big moments, and they wind up winning the football game at Buffalo, which could go a long ways in playoff scenarios and everything else for home field. And so just good matchups all through the day. I thought it was a very interesting day in the NFL on Sunday. We got the Monday night game. of course, between the Ravens are at Los Angeles, my friend John Gruden. Las Vegas, not Los Angeles. I'm watching Los Angeles. Too many Los Angeles teams. Las Vegas Raiders, so that'll be fun to watch.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
So yeah, we've good NFL action, but good college action on Saturday.
Well, some of it was good.
Although some of it was good and some of it, woof. Where do you want to start? Should we start with Florida USF since that game was played in Tampa?
Yeah, I think so. And I think there's some positives for USF to take out of the game. I mean, you know, they weren't going to win that game.
Right.
Florida's got too much talent and USF's still rebuilding. But, you know, and Jeff Scott even said this after the game. He goes, I think, you know, you're going to look at the second half of this game when we started to turn it around. And I think you saw some, you know, some improvements and some. You know, some positive momentum coming out of that game. I mean, you know, like I said, you were never going to win that game. That wasn't, you know, what you were hoping to. I mean, you were hoping to win it, but you know, realistically, it was about okay, we've played at North Carolina State and now Florida at home, which was practically a home game for Florida, and you know, we need to
right.
make sure that that's preparing us for what the American's going to give us this year. And you know, when you start playing the teams like UCF and you know, Houston and Cincinnati and that. So, you know, that's what you hope these first two games were preparing you for, and I think you saw some positive things come out of that game for USF.
Well, on the other hand, there's a big game in Gainesville next weekend. Alabama comes to Florida, and my question is, and I think I know the answer, I mean, I know who he's going to start at quarterback. I'm not sure it's the guy he should start. They've got, let's just say Emory Jones, okay, has been the starter. Dan Mullen maintains. I don't know why you keep asking who's the starter. He's our guy. But listen, he's thrown a couple interceptions in each game, okay? And Anthony Richardson, for my money, is special. Like, and I don't, like some of the plays he makes, apparently, like he's doing some unconventional things, maybe not following the script of the offense at times. He's such a superior athlete. But all the dude does is make plays. Like, whether it's his arm or his legs, he just is special. And if I'm going to try to beat Alabama, I need special. I know they're both going to play. I would play Richardson as much as I possibly could. Now, he kind of pulled up a hamstring a little bit on one of his touchdown runs. But you look at the production you've gotten from this guy, it's sort of, you know, he's got four touchdowns of at least 41 yards. So he's the most exciting guy that we've seen since a guy named Tim Tebow. He's really just at a different level. Maybe not as polished, like I said. Maybe we don't know the intricacies of getting in and out of the huddle that he should be doing. But man, what a talent that they have in that guy.
I have to assume that it's about protecting him and easing him along. I mean, you know, he got action against FAU and he's played against USF and he's looked great, but yeah. I wonder if they're just, you know, they know him better, they know their team, they know their guys. You wonder if it's just kind of protecting him a little bit from your first SEC conference game is going to be Alabama in week three,
which is a big task, right?
I mean
that you're going to see some things that might even get Emory Jones some trouble, but to go up to the line of scrimmage and not know what picture you're looking at against Nick Saban.
Well,
right?
And it's going to be pick your spots in that game where he's going to come in and do things, and he's going to play. But the pressure of starting, the mindset that you have to go in with it, everything about it. I mean, you know, sometimes we forget these are 18, 19, 20-year-old kids too.
Yeah.
You know, they're not polished pros that, you know, go in and they, you know, come under center and nothing phases them. That's, you know, this is college, and this is part of the growth of college and as an athlete, particularly a quarterback, that, you know, if you've got someone like Emory Jones who you like and is your guy, you can kind of ease him along. I mean, you know, what is Chicago doing with Justin Fields this year? You know, right now they're starting Andy Dalton. And Justin Fields playing right. some, but you know, it's you know, and you know, Andy Dalton is an experienced quarterback, so you've got a good defense in Chicago. You know, you went with the experienced quarterback, but you're also kind of protecting Justin and easing him along and putting him in positions to succeed instead of just it's your show now, you know, you take us and lead us.
Yeah.
You know, if you can protect them, sometimes that's the better play.
Yeah, because I think when you turn to somebody like that, you got to turn to them for good. You know what I'm saying? Like, we've talked about this in baseball, but I think that's one of those positions where if he's going to be your starter, then he has to be in a position to continue on as the starter. You don't want to go back and forth. You want to make sure he has enough experience to handle all that he's going to see in the SEC. And if he's just not there yet, there's no rush to play him. But, man, the temptation must be great for Mullen to put him in the game because all he does, as he used to say about Chris Carter, all he does is score touchdowns. All Richardson does is score touchdowns. I mean, big plays, huge plays, whether they're runs or passes. He's a terrific thrower and just a unbelievable athlete. So I like him better. I think he's going to wind up being their guy. I don't know how soon that'll happen. I know they're both going to play. Alabama will have to prepare for both. That's going to be a fun game. I don't know how good Florida's defense. I don't know how good Florida is. You know, I just haven't quite put my.
Well, I mean, they've played FAU and USF, so we don't know yet.
Yeah, it's just you can't tell. You know what I mean? And we've seen Alabama against Clemson, so we kind of, you know, I'm not Clemson. We saw who did Alabama start with? My bad. It was Clemson and Georgia.
They played
Alabama
Miami.
With Miami, and they beat the living snot out of them. Although it turns out I don't think Miami's very good, but. At least it was Miami. I would think Miami's better than USF and, you know, certainly better than FAU. So it's a little better test. But the game's in Gainesville. They'll have a big crowd there. Alabama travels well, too. But I think it's going to be just an unbelievable atmosphere. And it might not be the only time they play Alabama. If Florida can win their division, beat Georgia, win their side of the division, I'll see them again in the SEC title game. So this might just be one of two. But early. Great college matchup there in Gainesville next Saturday. Meanwhile, Florida State, folks, you're going the wrong way. I don't even think it's a question. This is the worst loss since Florida State became relevant again under Bobby Bowden. This is the worst loss that the Seminoles have suffered at home, for sure, and probably ever.
Just when you thought they were getting back to relevance.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they – Notre Dame, they played. They were down late. They came back and tied it, sent it to overtime. You had Mackenzie Milton just come back in there. You just had so many positive vibes coming out of that game, even though they lost to Notre Dame. And you know, they said themselves, we're not taking moral victories. But for a program that's been down for a while, you saw a lot of positives that you could say, hey, we can start building on this.
Absolutely.
And then to go lose, you know, at home to Jacksonville State the next week.
The way they lost.
Well, that too. I mean, that was just, you know, horrible defense on that play. Either take the man or the ball. You got to pick one.
Take somebody. 59-yard touchdown pass to Jacksonville State receiver Damon Philaw Johnson in his little bob and weave. I think he caught it about the 10-yard line. Might have gotten one block. There's about four Seminole defenders. Nobody laid a finger on him, and he walked in the end zone. And they win as the clock expires, 20-17. I'll give it, you know, to Mike Norvell. He put it on his shoulders, and where else would it belong, right? He said it's 100% on me. We didn't get our guys prepared. It's embarrassing. You know, Mackenzie Milton started and played the game, but there was a lot of mistakes, a lot of penalties, and then, of course, defensively, you know, I don't know what the last defense was supposed to be. But it wasn't good. And, yeah, it's the worst loss that the Seminoles have had to a team, you know, from that division of college football. It was terrible. So, you got nowhere to go but up. I guess that's the good thing, especially coming off that game against Notre Dame. Well, that's true. They go to Wake Forest, and they're trying to avoid an 0-3 start for the first time since 1976, if that tells you anything about where they're at as a program. So, yeah, look out below. There's not much bottom left for the Seminoles to find, but we'll see. After rallying from 18 points down, you know, to force overtime a week ago, they get beat at home by Jacksonville State, which should never happen. Jacksonville State, God bless them, they got paid, they took the check, but those kids, very few, if any, probably belong on that same football field with the Florida State Seminole players, and yet they walked out of there with a win. So that was quite impressive. So if you got any questions, and why wouldn't you, right, on college football, the NFL, which we just talked about, or for that matter on the Tampa Bay Rays, who we're going to get to here in just a second, we're going to do a mailbag segment tomorrow. I haven't done that in a while. So send us your questions. You can do that very easily on Twitter. Just send them to @SportsDayTB. You can reach me on Twitter @NFLStroud. Or my email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. Bring us anything. All questions are answered 100% correctly. We'll be happy to use them for you on the podcast and answer them there. So speaking of the Rays, I didn't get a chance to watch a lot of Rays baseball. I did see what I think is the worst outcome in baseball, the walk-off walk. There can't be anything more dispiriting than a walk-off walk.
Particularly when you walk several guys before that.
Right.
It drives me nuts when relievers come in the game and just throw ball after ball. It just drives me nuts that if you're going to get beat, if they're going to hit it, fine, let them hit it. But when you just walk guys, it just drives me nuts.
Yeah, especially when you know, like when you load the bases, like when you walk that last guy and now you push a guy to third and it's, you know, there's nowhere to put him, so to speak. You just know that the pressure is all on the pitcher at that point, you know. Guys can sit back. And there were some close strikes. Was it J.P. Fireisen, I think, that was on the mound?
Yeah, in the 11th, yes.
Yep. I'm not sure, but yeah. And, you know, of course, the Rays blew a couple of leads before that were, you know, shouldn't have gotten to that point, to be honest with you. And we talked about this a little bit before the podcast. This is not – they're clearly trying to manage some innings here because they are not necessarily throwing out their A bullpen when they get leads these days.
Yeah, I was talking with Neil Solons on Sunday, and who's the Rays radio pre and post game host, and it's interesting how they're managing their bullpen here. I mean, Colin McHugh hasn't pitched in, what, 6 days? Now he's going to start tonight in Toronto. They didn't use Pete Fairbanks at all in the Detroit series. I think they're saving him for the Toronto series.
Nick Anderson is available now.
Yeah, Nick Anderson, he was activated on Sunday. He didn't pitch, so presumably he's going to pitch in this mm-hmm. Blue Jays series. But
yeah,
their bullpen right now is struggling, and it's in one particular area. They're struggling to get left-handers out. Now, when you go up against the Yankees, the Red Sox, the Blue Jays, those are right-handed dominant lineups. But you start facing mm-hmm. the Astros. The White Sox have some dangerous left-handers. You know, those are the teams you kind of worry about. Seattle has some left-handers you worry about. You know, right now they're struggling to get, and they don't have a lot of left-handed arms in that bullpen. We were going through, you know, all the lefties that are hurt on this team. You know, from Colin Pochet to Oliver Drake, who's a right-hander, but actually gets left-handers out better. Mm-hmm. You know, you go through the lefties on this that they have, and almost all of them are on the IL at this point, many out for the season. And so you kind of wonder, you know, when they get to the playoffs, assuming they still get there, but obviously the numbers look pretty good. You know, how mm-hmm. if they face a team that's got a lot of lefties in it, it's going to be, you know, how are they going to match that up? You know, I think, like I said, the AL East teams, I think they do fairly well against because there's a lot of righties in those lineups. But some of the other teams, it's going to be interesting how they manage it, because right now they're struggling to get left-handers out.
Yeah, that's going to be tough. And like I said, you know, Luis Patino, okay. You know, hopefully you get McClanahan back off the IL. I don't know who your third starter necessarily will be. I guess
probably Drew Rasmussen at this point.
Probably Rasmussen. Yeah, they built him up, and he's done well. So. Mm-hmm. Nothing against any of these guys. It's just that you're obviously going to have to rely on your bullpen more than you have in the past, I think. And that being said, it just takes one guy. You know, it just takes one guy to not be on his game, and everybody else could do their job and go out there and get, you know, three up, three down. If you get in enough trouble with one dude on any given night, you know, these games are going to be tight. I don't think they're going to bash people 8-1. I don't think they're going to do that. Clearly, their offense is way, way better than it's been. So, you know, almost everybody has to be on it every single night. And maybe postseason baseball will do that, and maybe they'll have the full complement of their A bullpen, and they'll be able to mix and match, and Kevin Cash will be able to put guys in the right positions, and they'll cruise through it. But it doesn't seem to me that everybody's going to be on every single night, and I just think it's tough. If you're only getting four innings, maybe five, you know, now you got Archer, had hip stiffness the other night, so, you know, he's back to being iffy.
You wonder if he's done as a Ray.
Well, probably is, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, what can you – there's no way you can put him out there and expect much, right? Like, am I going to get two innings tonight? Am I going to get one? It's the same injury that's been bothering him. It's not as if it's getting better. So I think you're not going to go into it saying, well, we can count on Chris Archer, because you can't. There's just nothing, you know, nothing that would say he's going to stay healthy. So I don't know. I mean, they're good shape as far as winning the division, clearly. Really good shape as far as making the playoffs. But after that, I don't know how it's going to set up. And then Wander Franco now. We haven't talked about him. Mm-hmm. He had a little bit of tweak of a hamstring. They think they'll get him back by the end of the regular season. But you certainly need a guy like that, as hot as he was, as much as he means to your offense.
Well, Dave, you know, Wells that, was talking on Sunday that, you know, as much as Nelson Cruz gets credit for, you know, the Rays offense really took off when he, you know, around the time that they traded for Nelson Cruz, and rightfully so. I think, you know, he lengthens that lineup and adds a lot of protection for guys. But that's also about the time Wander Franco started figuring it out and wasn't striking out and was, you know, starting that streak of, I think 38, 39 games right now. The streak's still going. He's just hurt right now. But, you know, getting those, you know, productive at-bats and not striking out and putting the ball in play and going deep in the counts, as Wander does, you know, that really helped the lineup, yeah, too. And you know, I think the Rays are going to miss that for the last, you know, 19 games down the stretch here, or however long he's out for. And you know, you'd need him back for the playoffs.
Yeah, he was our hottest hitter, I think. And, you know, I'm also – one that believes that it's not a coincidence that when they got Nelson Cruz, I think at the time Wander was in or just coming out of an 0-18. And I think those bus rides, those plane rides, the long doc talks in the dugout, guy like that can settle a young player down. You know, I've been at it 20 years, pal. You know, here's how you got to handle stuff. Mm-hmm. So maybe that helps some too. But yeah, Wander was swinging a great bat. Obviously, he's, you know, a factor when he gets on the bases, and their lineup is not nearly as potent without him than it was with him. Switch hitter on top of that. So, yeah, he's missed. And they absolutely want to take their time, make sure he's back, you know, for the postseason as healthy as he can be. So I don't think it's a serious thing, but hamstrings are funny. You know, the last thing you want to do is come back too soon. You can re-injure that and then be gone for a long time. They absolutely got to have him in October for the postseason. So, It's a funny time for the Rays, because I think they realize they have a pretty comfortable lead. You know, Toronto, there's some battles going on for the wild card, obviously, between the Red Sox and the Yankees, and even for
as we stand now, the Yankees are playing on Sunday night baseball. They're trailing. If they lose tonight, they will be a game out of the wild card. That Toronto has passed them now.
Mm.
Now the Rays are in Toronto for three, so it's going to be very interesting. But right now it's the Red Sox and Blue Jays in the wild card game if the playoffs started today, assuming the Yankees do lose tonight and they're trailing tonight as we record this.
That's fascinating. Toronto's playing the best of either of those teams right now. And we'll see if the Rays can slow them a bit, because it would certainly be to their benefit. I don't know what the magic number is. They probably have one, but we got to be eking a little bit closer.
It's 11.
As they go forward here. Is it 11? Okay. Makes sense. Makes sense. I mean, still a phenomenal year. They're still waiting, I think, for their 90th win. They got 89 on the season, I believe. So still on pace. They could win. Well, they could win 100 games still, which is just remarkable to think of. So it was a busy weekend. Needless to say, a lot of football. We'll be getting you guys ready all week long for the Bucks and the Atlanta Falcons. That game at Raymond James Stadium. Full crowd expected once again. Maybe not the national TV audience, and certainly not Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth, but nonetheless, a nice warm, toasty afternoon game is nice, especially for riders on deadline. So the Rays continue on their road trip. They're against the Blue Jays, only this time in Toronto.
Yes, this will be the third ballpark they have played Toronto on the road this year. They've played in Dunedin, they played a series in Buffalo, and now a series in Toronto.
It's just remarkable. I credit the Blue Jays for navigating all this COVID stuff, because it's not comfortable for you to have a home away from home, which is no home at all. But they are back finally in Toronto. So make sure you submit your mailbag questions. We're going to do that tomorrow. As I said, you can send those to us on Twitter at SportsDayTV. Reach me on Twitter at NFLStroud, or my email address is rstroud@tampabay.com. Check out tampabay.com and the Tampa Bay Times for all the Bucks, the Rays, the Bolts, and college football, of course, as always. For Steve Burstink, I'm Rick Stroud of the Tampa Bay Times. Great day, everybody.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.